Welcome to The Corner Table, a podcast about food and drink in Madison, Wisconsin, produced by the Capital Times. I am your host, Lindsay Christians, food editor at the Cap Times. We are going week by week with Top Chef Wisconsin. I'm having different guests on every week, oftentimes people involved with the show, and this week we have two. First, I'm talking with Carrie Rademacher, executive director of Taliesin Preservation in Spring Green. Carrie and Taliesin hosted film crews and a dozen chef competitors on episode 4 of Top Chef Wisconsin. We are talking about Frank Lloyd Wright and architecture and food, but note that there's no major spoilers in this part of the episode. Then I get to talk with my friend Lauren Montalbano, a chef in Madison who had a special role during the Taliesin Challenge and roped me into one too. If you've ever wondered what it's like to be on camera but not the center of attention during one of these challenges, we are going deep behind the scenes on this one. If you need to catch up on Top Chef episodes, you can find them on Peacock the day after they air, typically by midday on Thursday every week. Give a listen. Cheers. Hi, Carrie. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Lindsay.
Absolutely. How long have you been with Taliesin?
I've been here for, I believe, going on 22 years. In this role as executive director, I've been doing it for, I believe I'm going on 8 years now.
That's amazing. You've seen some real change in the food programs at Taliesin during that time. Oh my gosh.
I've seen a lot of change all over the place at Taliesin. So yeah.
I believe it. So my first sort of opening question is, how does Frank Lloyd's philosophy around the natural world relate to or intersect with food at Taliesin?
That's a great question, Lindsay. And, you know, Taliesin was Frank Lloyd Wright's laboratory. It was his laboratory for living. And he created it in 1911. And just like much around here, it evolved over the years. In the 1930s, Frank Lloyd Wright developed his apprenticeship program, where he brought students from around the world to come here and learn from him. And Taliesin was always this sustainable kind of community, but it became even much more in the 1930s when he developed his apprenticeship program. And it was a sustainable farm. So food and Taliesin are symbiotic. They go hand in hand. And what we like to do is we like to call Taliesin this rural laboratory for living that's centered around architecture, agriculture, culture, and nature. So what we're going to be talking about today is just the combination of all of those things here at Taliesin and what we have to offer for the general public.
That is so many things to combine in so many different ways. When you heard that the film crews were interested in filming at Taliesin, what were your first thoughts and how did you get ready to host them?
Well, that's such a great question. And it's a fun thing just thinking back now. What was it, seven? No, actually, it was over a year ago, year and a half ago, when Rob Gard from Destination Madison had reached out to me and he said, you know, there's some people that are interested. They want to come out to Taliesin. And I was like, great. Yeah, we get this all the time. And I was like, sure, come on out. And then it ended up with the weather and the timing that they needed me to come to Madison. So I was like, okay, great, I can do that. And so I go and we were at Quiffy's Grove. And Rob Gard, I knew, was there. And Craig Trost with Travel Wisconsin was there. And so I saw their faces, knew them, but I had no idea who else was at the table. And they didn't tell you who they were either. It was like this big secret. And I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. Maybe it's legit, you know, because we get reached out to a lot about things and they never really compile to much. But so I'm sitting at the table and asking questions, but they're very vague because they needed to be. They didn't want to let anybody know at this point. And they were just touring around Wisconsin and looking for places to film. So they asked me to talk about Taliesin. So I was there and I'm always happy to talk about Taliesin. But I left that meeting thinking, okay, I tried to present it as much as possible, but I don't know. I don't know what they're looking for. I don't know who they are or what interest they're taking here. So anyways, it was quite a few months later. And I think I had reached out to Rob and was like, hey, have you heard anything? And he's like, well, we don't know yet. And I was like, okay. But then obviously when it was time for them to let us know that this is happening, we were all super excited, but we still didn't know who it was.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy. And we were like, okay, there's recording, there's filming for a culinary show, but no idea any of the details, of course, until we got further into the agreements and you know, working on the scheduling and all of that kind of stuff.
Taliesin is a historic site, and there is a lot there that's, you know, preservation is in the name.
Yeah.
So when you have people come in who are doing a very high energy, you know, it's a bit messy. There's a lot of people running around. How do you balance the need to keep things preserved and keep things nice with the ability to sort of accommodate those film crews and the contestants and everything?
Yeah. And I would say there it's staffing. It's bringing the people to the table that need to be part of the table. So with us, our mission here is public education and helping to preserve the natural, built, and cultural environments at Taliesin. But we don't own the property. And so we worked with the property owners, the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation, and their team of preservationists, historians, archivists. So we all kind of came around the table. Once we knew what the film crew was looking for, then we did a site visit with them. They said, well, can we do this? Can we do that? And again, we would just kind of talk it through and say, okay, we how do we get to a yes? We want to help them. We want them to have the most incredible shots that they can, but how do we do it safely in preserving the buildings? When they were filming here at the Visitor Center, we are now on the National Register as a historic place, but we weren't at the time. Not that that makes much of a difference. However, this building it's 50 years old compared to 125 years old. So it allows for more flexibility here, which we'll see in the episode that they were here quite a bit filming in the Visitor Center, which was a lot of fun too.
And it means you don't have to be quite as protective of the things that are very old. Things are just a little bit old.
Exactly. And we have the public here all the time in this building.
So you got to sit in on some of the challenge, right? Like you got to have some of the food that they were making?
No.
You didn't?
No. I know. I got to. So during the filming, I was sitting literally on our reception desk. You know, as you walk into the front entrance, we have this reservation reception desk. And I sat on that glued for like, I don't know, however, 3 hours, 4 hours that they were filming here. And I was just watching. It was the most, I've never been a part of a film crew like this. So I just sat and watched, and I got to watch them eat. But no, we didn't get to have any of the food.
I was thinking before our talk about architecture as this intersection of art and practicality, and how Frank Lloyd Wright often seemed to emphasize the art part of it. It's very designed for short people like me in those entranceways, for example. I'm like, this is fine with me. Like, I'm not being flown anyplace because I'm 5'2". But, you know, he would make things that were sometimes like a little less comfortable, but a little like beautiful lines or beautiful incorporation into the natural world and the countryside. And it seems to me that very highly technical food in like a fine dining restaurant might have some similar things in play. This is very beautiful, but maybe it's not as filling as a burger, but it's gorgeous. And it's designed in a way to be very aesthetically pleasing while still, again, engaging with that natural element of the ingredient and the food. And I wonder, do you think we're more likely to forgive a very beautiful but uncomfortable chair than we are to forgive a very beautiful but not that delicious plate of food? Do you think we think about them in similar ways, or is it fundamentally different to you?
Oh, good question. I think, you know, for Wright in creating architecture, for him, it was all about crafting an experience for an individual. It was about how do they present themselves to, or how does the house present themselves or present itself to the individuals as you're walking through the front door, finding the front door, as you're navigating from room to room. And I think I'm not a chef, but I think, you know, the experience of an individual going to a restaurant to sit down, it's all, again, it's about the crafting the experience. It's about you eat with your eyes first. And so, you know, the how things appear to you, but also even before that, how you enter into the restaurant, what are the sounds, what are the sights, how the menu and everything, kind of a story unfolds. And I think that's what Wright was doing with architecture as well. I don't know whether people are going to be more forgiving if, you know, it's a beautiful presentation, but maybe the food wasn't all that great. I don't know. I think what we ultimately remember is the experience of an evening, less about like, well, I remember the scallops and they were horrible or something like that. It's how did I feel during this meal? And I think that the chefs in particular are so skilled at really crafting that experience.
Oh, I believe it. This is going to put Taliesin on a national stage, one that it was already on, but in a new way, maybe, that it hasn't been before. And I wonder, what do you hope the people watching this will take away from this episode that's shot at Taliesin?
Oh, well, first off, I hope they take away this idea of a living community, that people are here, we are here. This is a living laboratory. It was to Wright, and what we're trying to do is create that, take Wright's vision into the 21st century. So I hope that they take that away. I also hope that if they are not familiar with Taliesin, that they say, oh my God, I want to go there. We're all like bursting at the seams thinking, what is this going to do? What, you know, taking, you know, Taliesin has not been on a national platform like this before. So we are super excited and just can't wait to see what happens this summer and all the incredible people that we look forward to welcoming here from around the world.
Well, on that note, that's a great segue to tell us about the cafe this summer, when the hours are going to be, how can people come and visit, and how can they eat at Taliesin?
Great. So we are open. Our tour season opens for the regular season, May 1st through October 31st. We're open 7 days a week. The Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center, which is part of Top Chef Filming, is the gateway to Taliesin. So it is kind of, as we were talking about the experience, this is where you come and have Taliesin kind of laid out in front of you. So the tours check in here. We have an incredible, beautiful gift shop. And then, as you mentioned, Lindsay, we have a cafe. It's called the Riverview Terrace Cafe. This was Wright's concept that he had probably from the 1940s to the 1950s when he actually started to build this building. He was 90 years old at the time. Imagine that. Yeah. So that is part of our incredible legacy that we get to carry forward. The Riverview Terrace will be open for lunch 7 days a week, May 1st through October 31st, from 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. We are here for our guests that are taking tours, but we're also here for anybody that's driving through, the local community, the greater community. Come here, have a wonderful place to eat, incredible views overlooking the Wisconsin River. And what we do with our food here is we like to make it sustainable. So we work with a lot of our area farmers in this within a 30-mile region to provide the food for us. And then we cook it right here and serve it.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for this, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you.
That was Carrie Rademacher, Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation in Spring Green. The season is starting soon for tours and lunches. Visit taliesinpreservation.org for details.
The Corner Table is sponsored by Garver Events. Come to Top Chef Wisconsin watch parties on April 17th and May 8th, held in the Garver Feed Mill Atrium at 3241 Garver Green. These parties are free and open to the public, with food and drink available from the Garver Lounge, Ian's Pizza, and Roleplay. On April 17th, Lindsay will host a pre-show chat with Shayna Robbins-Papich of the Harvey House, starting at 7 p.m., with the episode airing at 8 p.m.
Next, I'm talking with Lauren Montalbano, chef and owner of The Vibrant Veg, a plant-based catering and meal kit business in Madison. Lauren and I both worked behind the scenes on episode 4 of Top Chef Wisconsin, but note that at the time of this conversation, neither of us had seen the finished product. So think of this as a teaser, and of course, no big spoilers, but we are going behind the scenes. Enjoy! Hi, Lauren!
Hi, Lindsay.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I'm even better now that you're here.
So for folks maybe who don't know you and your incredible food, can you tell us really quickly who you are? Tell the listeners who you are, because I know.
All right. So I'm Lauren Montalbano. I'm the owner and operator of The Vibrant Veg, which is a meal service program and catering company here in Madison, Wisconsin. And I've been operating this business for about 4 years.
And you have been a professional chef for a pretty long time at this point, yeah?
Well, that's relative. But I have been a chef in Madison for about 10 years now, pioneering plant-based foods.
So you have been working back of house for a very long time, but for the episode that's dropping this week, you were front of house. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that and where people might see you in this episode.
Well, yeah, this was just such a fun opportunity. I happened to know an event organizer who was working with some of the Top Chef folks while they were here, and they asked her if she had access to servers. And we work together all the time. So she's like, girl, you want to do something cool? So I did actually kind of start my culinary career in front of house, and then also doing a bit of GM front of house manager work. And so, yeah, I rallied my closest friends who also had serving experience, yourself included, to come and throw down and serve the judges on episode 4. And it was so much fun. It was so much fun to just be a part of it and watch it from that chef perspective, as well as, you know, get to be on camera, because I am a little bit of a ham when it comes to that as well. I love it. But it was also very terrifying. We all got assigned different judges to serve, and we had to serve those judges. And I got to serve Gail, and she is terrifying to me. In a good way, you know, like, she's cutthroat. She says what's on her mind, but you don't want to screw up.
No, you really do not.
And when I get nervous, I get a little shaky. I mean, whilst I was a server, I met my now mother-in-law for the first time, because she came into the restaurant because Kyle also worked there. And her first impression of me was I went out to serve her and almost poured an entire bottle of wine on her lap.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, that's how things could go for me. So thank God I didn't spill anything on Gail.
Oh, my gosh. You have to serve certain things from one side and then clear from the other side, right? There's rules about fine dining service.
There is rules about fine dining service, yes. And I've forgotten them all. but, you know, they did a very good job telling us what we had to do. But, you know, you have to hold. Some people get still water, some people get sparkling water, some judges get red wine, some judges get white wine. So you have to remember, obviously, what your judge wants, and then keep an eye on their glasses. And then it even comes down to, because the water is being sponsored, you have to have the label faced out a certain way. And typically you're holding two bottles. So then you also have to pour with your left hand, which, who has practiced pouring with their left hand? And then you're nervous. So you're sweating. So then your hands are wet. It's all these things that you don't think about.
I feel like the most terrifying moment would be going from the kitchen where the chefs have just finished plating this beautiful thing and the fate of them in the competition is on the line and you have to get that safely to the judges without any missteps and it's got to be perfect because if you screw it up, I mean, just that feels like pressure to me just in that little moment.
Well, see, and I felt more comfortable with that because I do that every day. You know, I'm constantly serving people food. I care about those things. I know how to not screw up a plate. I do not know how to pour water without splashing. You know, like I do know how to do that, but I don't do it every day, but I'm practiced carrying plates. I mean, you can load me up and I'll be fine and nothing will fall. But this pouring of the water, that was the thing that got me.
So for the other servers, you recruited all like other women from Madison and from like food stuff in Madison, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Some fellow business owners. Am I allowed to say names?
I think so. I think at this point you can since the episode will have dropped. Yeah.
I got Marie from Brick Cider. We got Christy from Pasture and Plenty. I got Marissa DeGroot from Edible and Vitruvian Farms. I got my friend Beth Scogan of Beth Scogan Photography. Noah from Reap and you guys got to hide out and throw down in the dish pit.
We did throw down in the dish pit at one point, and I will talk more about this in a piece that I'm working on, but Jamie Lauren complimented us for being really fast. And I was so proud, like more proud than I am of some professional accomplishments I've had, like that we're not washing dishes.
And I mean, I went back there obviously to go get the plates and, you know, we had to go in and go out, but you guys, it looked like you had been full on like CrossFit workout all day. I mean, you were sweating, but you two were both smiling, but you were like, oh my God, the garbage disposal broke. I mean, there's stuff that comes at you. And then you've got a bunch of stressed chefs who need things back. I mean, I've worked in that kitchen previously and it is not a large kitchen.
It's a really small kitchen and I'm a short person. I'm 5'2". So there were a lot of times when we would finish up with this pan or that pan and maybe there's not room on the racks where I'm putting things down, but you know, this has got to go back up above where a chef can grab it. Well, I can't reach that high and I don't want to go behind them or like above their head.
Oh God, no.
But I want to be able to get stuff back. And also there were other things. There were certain things in the kitchen. Like there just weren't ladles. There were no ladles in that kitchen. And Jamie later said that was a mistake. She wishes that there had been ladles, but there just weren't any. So people kept asking us for them. And we were like, we don't have them. Try a spoon. You know, there's not, because they're pushing it through chinois, you know, the strainers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a thing. But then also everybody wanted Vitamix blenders and there weren't enough quarter sheet pans. So people kept asking us for like the small sheet pans. They were like one of the really little ones or half sheet, quarter sheet. And there just weren't that many. So then somebody would like find one and be using it. And then they would give it to us and say, that one comes back to me. Well, that's not the property of that one chef, but that one chef wants it back. Right.
What do you do? What's your moral obligation, Lindsay?
Well, and then I would be like, well, do I run it out to him? Because like, I'm trying to work as quickly as I can. But and sometimes I would run stuff back. And then also some things that the chefs have are theirs. Like they have their own knives. Usually the knives would not come to us. Right. Like,
they would not or go through the dishwasher.
No. Oh, no. They would say, you know, can I just get a rinse on this? Or something like that. And that was fine. But then you need to immediately get it back to them. And you're transporting things that are sharp in a kitchen that is pretty small among people who are running all over the place trying to do things very quickly. And like 20...
Welcome to kitchen life, Lindsay.
Yeah. Like 20 camera people and PAs that nobody sees in and among all of this. And I'm just trying to be as efficient as I can. Also, like without falling or slipping. As I'm trying to get stuff out to people.
Because you came from the pit. It is a wet and
it's
wild
very
place
wet
over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one full body apron. And Noah, who is younger, taller, and has more experience. I was
got the apron.
I was like, I think I'm going to get the apron. I'm like, you are definitely getting the apron. Yes, the apron is all you. I just let me not hold you back. Like, let me be an asset to you. But he was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you guys were killing it and you looked happy while you were doing it.
We were having a really good time. I was just watching and trying to absorb as much as I can, like just in the moment, and to see what was happening and what people were doing. And it's just, it's intricate, fast work. The technique is really incredible, but it's also interesting to see like how many people used Vitamixes. Like everybody used a Vitamix, like sometimes multiple times, like those blenders.
Oh yeah.
They're very into those.
One of my best tools.
Yes. And I was like, oh, okay, well, like this is a thing that everybody wants, a Vitamix and a Chinoa. Like this is how they're all going to make their sauces for all of these things.
100%. Yeah. So I have to ask, I know you're doing the interview, but I have to ask, when you're back in there, like, what are you feeling? Because it's an intense situation, coming at it from a different lens. How does that all look and feel to you, not being in the industry?
I felt so strongly that I wanted to be helpful and just not in the way, and do as much as I physically could to make it easy for them.
Yeah.
And they were all, for the most part, they were all very, they were good to us. They weren't rude. They weren't abrupt with us. They're under a very intense and stressful situation. But I think it was really helpful to have Jamie Lauren, who was a competitor on season 5. She's one of the kitchen managers now, the culinary team. And so is Stephanie Smar, who was also on a previous season. So they've done this competition before. And one of the things that Jamie said when she was bringing them through originally, like at the very top of things, very, very early in the morning before anything has really started, they bring all the chefs through and they show them the space. And she said, these are your dishwashers. Be nice to them. You know, they're here. They're here to help you. And I thought, I am here to help you. Like, I am here to be helpful. I'm also here as media, and I'm thinking and I'm watching and I'm trying to absorb as much as I can so that I can tell the story of the experience later, but not have that be top of mind, because that's not my job that day.
No, your job is only to make things clean.
Yes, right. And so it was interesting, but it also made me feel like, I know, we can do hard things. We can do things that feel a little bit unfamiliar or out of our depth. I've washed dishes professionally before. Of course, we all have. Come on, right? Yeah. Like everybody has. But I was in college the last time I was doing it regularly, and my body was younger.
It comes right back though, doesn't it?
It really, yeah. It's sort of like riding a bike.
Skill, not the body.
Yes, the skill. But I was just really thinking, I need to stay focused. I need to stay watching. And I need to be as helpful as I can without asking too many questions, without making myself an issue or a problem, because I can also be that person who just, excuse me, can you please, I just want to know, like, what's my motivation? You know, like I'm that question girl. So my job is generally a good fit. But in this moment, you know, you can't be asking a lot of questions. You just have to sort of go on instinct, like, okay, it looks like they're going to need more of these. So get these spatulas cleaned a little faster. Like, let's make sure these are going through. So yeah, it was exciting. It was tiring. It was a very energetic day.
And honestly, our jobs were definitely easier than yours. You and Noah got the short stick or the long one. I mean, because you got to spend all day back in the kitchen with the chefs, really getting that view. And we only got snippets, obviously, because they cannot have that many people. Nobody wants servers standing around in the kitchen. But we were in this tight little hallway space right outside the door. So I'm standing right in front of the kitchen door, just watching all the chefs work, and I'm sweating. Again, it's just like this response that I get when I watch the show, and now I'm watching them and I'm just pouring sweat. Thank God I was in black, but I'm just so nervous for them, you know? And then we have this great vantage point where we can watch them work. But also after we delivered the food to the judges, we can hear what the judges are saying about the food. And it's just awful. I mean, it's good and it's awful, because if you're hearing something bad, your heart cracks in half for these chefs, you know? And if I hadn't watched, you know, now as we're watching it, we're getting to know the people, right? I mean, we all kind of know Dan because he's the hometown hero, right? From Milwaukee, but we don't know them as people. They're just, here they are, they're cooking, they're making their dishes. But as I'm watching the people cooking, I'm like, wow, this person is so cool, calm, collected. You would never know that they are in a cooking competition right now. Like, they've got such intense focus, but they also have a lighthearted spirit. Or like, wow, look at that person. There would be no way in hell I would work with them, you know? So that's like what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, what I'm going in, who do I want to work with? Who do I not want to work with? But yeah, the moment you hear the judges say something bad about a dish, yeah, I mean, whether it was about somebody that I was fond of or not, while watching, I was just like, man, God, what would that feel like if they said that about my dish? It would be devastating.
Yeah. I do think, given the choice between the job that you did and the job that I did, I would pick mine again, because I liked being back there in the thick of things. But I did not know who the guest judges were. I didn't know Boudelot was there. I heard later that Dominique Crenn was there. I never saw them because I never went into the dining room, because I took it really seriously. Like, my job is to be a dishwasher and not be seen. I will not be in the way, right?
Well, yeah. And like, what are you going to do? Creep into that tiny little hallway and be like, hey, who's out there? No.
I think I tried it maybe once. And
oh, you
I
did.
Got kind of shooed back. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's valid. That's
they cool. run a tight ship. They're
yeah.
not going to let you wander.
Mm-mm, no. So it was really fun, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity. I'm glad you mentioned it. I felt really lucky to do it.
Yeah, I knew. I knew exactly. I just, when I got told I needed 6 servers and then additionally 2 more dishwashers after Taliesin said that they couldn't supply them, or I think that's what went down, I was like, I know who to choose. Yeah.
These people will do it happily. And we were very happy. We had a great time.
Yes. And there wasn't a lot of information on timing or anything that you got in advance. And it was a Friday morning and Friday midday. And so you have to find somebody that is flexible enough that they're not working a 9-to-5, or that they can step away from it for this kind of opportunity. So
just to wrap us up here a little bit, if you were going to do a cooking show, or be on a cooking show, what's the dream?
What's the dream? All right. There is only one vegan cooking show called Peeled. It had one season. They're currently, I think, looking for funding, but that's the dream. The dream is to be on a level playing field. You know, I know that there have been vegan chefs who have participated in a myriad of these cooking competitions. But I would want the level playing field. I would want to be on a show with all other vegan chefs so that we have ingredients that are tailored towards vegan cooking, and everybody's kind of on the same wavelength and somebody's not hucking a bunch of pork fat in there to make it better, you know?
That seems very fair. That seems very fair.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
This has been The Corner Table, a podcast about food and drink in Madison, Wisconsin. It is produced by the Capital Times and me, Lindsay Christians. Our music was composed and performed by Patrick Christians. Dylan Brogan edits the podcast. For more Top Chef content, visit captimes.com for weekly show recaps by our wonderful recapper, Stephanie Bedford. Garver Events sponsors this podcast, and we have a couple of watch parties coming up soon. On Wednesday, April 17th, join us starting at 7 p.m. for a pre-show chat and a screening of a very Madison-centric episode. And finally, for more Madison food intel, subscribe to the Corner Table newsletter. Every week we share news about restaurant openings, pop-ups, special events, and more. Go to captimes.com/newsletters to subscribe. Until next week, cheers!